97 FM Eastside Radio.
It's a piece of music called Silent Woods, and it's by Antonin Dvorak, and that is a piece of music that will be played at a concert about which I will share some details a little bit later on. But I have some very special news for you today, and that is I can announce that a performance called The Fire Always Says Yes will be held at the concert at the Sydney Opera House this Saturday, 25th of October at 7:30 p.m. And that's only half the good news I have for you. The other half is that that performance is by our local Waverley composer, Anna Hurst Friedman, in collaboration with Bondi poet Jessica Chapnik-Khan. Now, this is a major coup for our local talent here in the eastern suburbs, and we love showing off our local talent, particularly here on Eastside Radio. So the work itself explores the story of the human heart and traversing the inevitable process of facing ourselves through birth, love, death, and transformation. But the good news I have for you today is that I've got better news. And the news is that both Anna and Jessica are here in the studio with me right now. Jessica, Anna, welcome.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for having us.
Now, you're both Eastern Suburbs girls. Did you have a lot of trouble finding the studio today?
Just walked barefoot from my house.
Just to drive down to Bondi.
Have you had a swim today?
No, I'm actually a little afraid of water, believe it or not.
Not today, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. But let's, before we get to the music and the concert, you're both Eastern Suburbs artists. How and when did you meet? Was it a stroll along the beach? Was it in the local pub?
No. Anna, do you remember our exact... I think we met through yoga or Vedic philosophy studies. Anna and I enjoy our mystical studies. We've crossed paths in a lot of them, Jewish mysticism, Vedic mysticism, you name it. So that's our sort of our origin story.
Right.
I think I got that right.
Yeah.
Vedic philosophy, otherwise known as Hindu philosophy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And happy Diwali, by the way.
Oh, yes, that's today.
Yes, it is.
So it is. Yeah. Oh, well, I've missed that I was to do a special on Monday Drive, so you'll have to wait till next year till we throw paint all over each other. Isn't that what you do?
No, that's Holi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. It's the Festival of Lights.
Festival of Lights,
yes.
Okay. All right, let's get back to Hindu philosophy.
Yeah.
That's something that is not terribly widely taught, or I wouldn't have thought it is anyway. Tell us about what it's all about and what drew you to it individually, because you were both individually drawn.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get attracted to it?
Sure. I think for me, there's a lot of similarity between the path of self-realization and liberation of the self with my connection to Judaism as well. So I would say that both Judaism and or Kabbalah, which is the Jewish mysticism, and Hinduism have a lot of similarities in what they seek and what they look for. And so we ask three questions in the Vedic tradition. Who are we? Where are we going? And why are we here? And I find that such a wonderful way to live your life.
And as far as studying it is concerned, that would probably take 30 seconds, I would have thought, wouldn't it?
It's forever. It's 30 seconds and forever.
What drew you to it, Anna?
For me, Alan, I love the poetry in the mystical traditions. I think they're so heart-opening. I began with Kabbalah, which is the Jewish mystical teachings, and so many of my favorite poets are Sufis, Rumi, and real, so many. And and Christianity, even the mystical side of Christianity, and they're all just, I think they all point to the heart as the original brain, as the center of knowing. And as a poet, I just could read this stuff forever.
So it takes more than 30 seconds.
There's a lot to read.
Yes, there's a lot to read. Do you find it a little bit repetitive and...
Repetitive, no. There's so many layers, in the same way that you could read Shakespeare and, you know, there's so many commentaries, different commentaries you could find, you know, 70 meanings. I think there's a Kabbalah thing, there's 70 meanings to every... Oh, I'm going to get that wrong, all the Kabbalists are going to tell me I got that wrong, but there's 70 meanings to each sort of story or idea. So you could just keep studying it. I'm also, my background is acting, so we'd study texts, and I've always just loved, you know, story, the way story works and the way we delve into meaning and the layers of meaning, from the more superficial to the really deep layers.
Okay. Anna, you're a composer. Yes, you're a composer. You studied music, but shortly after you studied it, you stopped. Why did you stop? Did you not like it? Did you feel that you wanted to get more into the Hindu philosophy?
That's a really great question. I felt like I loved doing my degree at Sydney University. It was a very special degree. It was not with the Conservatorium of Music at that time. It was with Sydney University Music Department. And we specialised in a lot of fantastic music not from the West. So I studied a lot of Indonesian gamelan and Japanese no drama. And that really helped shape a lot of my thinking and reasons for why I enjoy writing music. But I left that degree because I needed to see the world. So I went overseas and I did a bit of traveling. And in those travels, I stumbled across Hindustani music and also music from the Middle East. So Iraqi, Arabic, Jewish music. And I was fortunate enough to play in a band called The Rivers of Babylon for a while. And I got to study Hindustani music for 5 years on the wonderful tabla by this great Pandaji, Guruji, called Pandit Shada Sahai from the Banaras lineage. So that, I feel like it was because I wanted to see the world that having these experiences helped formed my brain as a composer. And then upon returning to Sydney, that's when I met Jesse, and just continued through life, got into a bit of mothering, had my kids, and then 2 years ago I came back to composing. It was just like, I don't know, they say in Kabbalah, when you turn 40, you know, this is when you should study Kabbalah. So I feel like I've had this re-emergence, this reinvigoration of coming back to composing.
Your music has a certain leaning towards nature and motherhood and conflict.
Yes.
Aren't those themes in some sort of opposition, do you think?
It's an interesting question because as a mother, we have internal struggles. Are we making the right choices for our children? Are we being the best that we can be to our family, to our friends? And so there alone has its own conflict. And then within nature, nature's not always, reliable. It has its moments as well. So yeah. I think conflict arises in everything, but so does peace as well.
Yeah, your music has a very strong emotion to it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Tell us about The Eyes of a Child in the Times of War.
Oh, right. Well, I think that, you know, themes of conflict, I have to write about themes of conflict because that's coming from a place of deep emotion inside me, and it's a way of sort of expressing myself without having to put it into words. So music's a great emotive. It's a great way of sharing with the world, sharing with community your ideas and your thoughts on matters. And one of these matters for me is conflict, and conflict's affected all of us in so many different ways, world conflicts that we've been exposed to, especially the last couple of years. So The Eyes of a Child in Times of War, they're so innocent.
When did you write it?
I wrote that in 2024. Yeah.
Like I said, you can almost feel the emotion coming out of that music, can't you? Music and poetry have got a certain synergy about them, don't they? And the blending of both of your works is about to become quite exciting, isn't it? We're going to talk about that. Okay, so you both met, and it's all very well to meet and share a common interest, but it's another thing to meet and collaborate artistically. How did the collaboration part come about?
Well, where did we begin? You know, it's funny, I guess the first thing was Anna got a hold of a book that I wrote, a poetry book called Madre, and she would send me texts every now and then saying, hey, I'm like writing music to your poems. And I was like, cool, great. But I feel so inspired. This fire. And I'd be like, great. And I really didn't know where it was going, what she actually meant by that. And before I knew it, she'd composed seven pieces to seven of the poems, and I was in absolute shock when I heard them for the first time. I almost fell off my chair because they were so beautiful.
It's almost an accidental collaboration then.
Well,
isn't it?
I wouldn't call that a collaboration. It was almost like, for me, in my pop indie world, it's like she covered the poems in
right.
the musical. You know, it was like musical covers of poems.
Yep.
So that began something. And I will say, though, before that happened, I had a dream once, a dream with Anna, where she was playing piano for me, and the notes on the piano were all white, the keys. And I remember just being really struck by that dream, just these white keys, so unusual. And I think now it offers a lot about Anna's work for me. She's really into new, bold ideas. Mm. So, yeah, it was a precursor.
You both have a certain similarity of rhythm about you, don't you? Your manner, your personalities, your likes, your dislikes, your philosophies. That's my observation. Am I wrong? Yeah.
I would say we're extremely different, but you know, I welcome difference.
If you are different, how come the music and the words are so synergistic? How come they work so well together, if that's the case?
I think things need that kind of friction. I think all work needs good friction. That's how you create the fire.
Absolutely. And I think it's it was a new world for you as well, exploring this classical, neoclassical ideas.
Absolutely.
As a musician yourself, Jessie.
Yeah. Never
your
done
experiences
anything like
were
this.
Yeah. A little bit different.
Absolutely.
To mine.
And to collaborate in a way where I wasn't fully involved in every aspect, that was extremely new for me, to just hand over written words and let things happen in another place.
Absolutely.
Was really interesting.
And also, I don't consider myself a poet or anything that's I'm not much of a reader myself. So being exposed to Jessie's poems has really transformed me as a composer. I never thought that I would write music set to words. I always considered myself a chamber musician or orchestra musician, a composer. So this is something new for me as well.
You picked up on the Madre, on the book of poems, but Jess, you said you didn't know you were writing a book at the time.
Right.
You said, I had no idea I was writing a book. It was the furthest thing from my mind. I started writing to understand my experience.
Yes.
Did you understand your experience as a result of your writing?
No, I'm still understanding my experience. I think it's an ongoing, fluid becoming that never ends. So I still am writing about my experience, and I understand little tiny bits when I read back memory, but no, it's a perpetual understanding.
Did you see yourself as a poet, a serious poet in the beginning? Because most serious poets tend not to write their thought on napkins and receipts and discarded wrapping paper as you did.
I think they do. I know many poets that do that, actually, in my community. But I think, yes, I always considered myself a poet. My songwriting, I felt, were poems that I'd put into songs. It wasn't something that I told people I was, because I was doing other things. But I did always consider that to be my first thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You drew with your non-dominant hand.
Yes.
What's that all about?
Oh, you should try it, Alan. It's really amazing.
I can't draw with my dominant hand.
Exactly. Neither can I. I don't draw. But I found that the experience of motherhood, which can be any transformative experience that anyone is going through, I couldn't even understand it with words. The poems were a failure in a sense because I was desperately trying to understand, but it was like beyond words. And so I wanted to understand my experience and my child's face and everything by through image. And because I knew I didn't draw and I would judge and I would say, I can't draw a hand, I can't draw a face, I can't draw the body, I began drawing with my left hand, which is my non-dominant hand, and I knew I wouldn't judge that because you're not meant to be able to draw with your non-dominant hand. And I loved that it brought out this naive quality and this childlike quality, and I couldn't judge it, like my child self showing me a picture. You know, it was so refreshing and it felt so good to express myself in that way.
We heard a sample of Anna's music just a few moments ago. Here is some of your poetry.
The loneliness is deep, even in my happiest moments with you. The days are short, but the night hours burn like prickly flames that have no warmth or kindness. I want to be held, but now my arms are for holding. I want to ask, but now my voice is for answering. I bury my face in your neck, in your clothes, in your hair. Loneliness never smelt so sweet.
Well, there you go. That's you.
That's me, with a harmonium in the background, played by my husband.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? How do music and poetry join creatively? Does one lead? Does the other follow?
It's a really interesting question because I used to have an argument with one of my friends at university about this because she was more centred around the words and I was always centred around the music. This is a difficult question. For me, the music always comes first before the words, but the words do definitely. So I hear, like, if I'm looking at a piece of poetry, I want to convert it into a musical language, then I'll just read the words as if I'm singing them, as if I can hear the music to them. So I do find it a bit challenging just reading the words alone. I have to actually put music to it. And to actually understand what I'm reading.
Yeah, I noticed that working with Anna. I felt like the words only made sense to you when some music was appearing in your mind with the words, and then you drop in, oh, I get that line, you know, and it was like, oh, wow, this is so interesting because I don't work that way. I work words first always. So it was really fascinating to watch you.
So when you got the Madre poetry,
yeah,
you read it,
yeah,
and then did a theme come, a musical theme come
straight
to your
away.
Mind
straight away, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever looked back at them and said, nah, the music is wrong?
No. I mean, it could be an interesting thing to do, to try to rewrite music to the words, but I think they're perfect just as they are.
Okay. So let's turn to The Fire Always Says Yes. It's an element of the Heartfire production, and it's coming up at the Opera House on Saturday. Tell us a little bit about it. It is, quote, set within a striking musical landscape. The work it evokes a perpetual fire that consumes the past and purifies what lies ahead. Can you explain to us the context of that fire and its reach from the past and into the future?
The Heartfire. I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, actually, Alan, you know, that the heart as the original brain, as the seat of a truth, as a place of seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that this music, that this work is an invitation to the heart as a place of hearing as well. I think fire is often associated with the heart. You know, images that came to mind for me were things like, you know, the sacred heart,
mm-hmm.
The burning bush, lots of mythological stories throughout many traditions. So, you know, certain things happen in my personal life that revolved around hearts. Over the span of 3 years, so many life events revolved around hearts, and I began to think about the heart as the organ, but also as that seat of knowledge, as that place of feeling, as that place of knowing, as that place of thinking, hearing, seeing. And so I brought that into this work as a fire, we're all alive here. And everywhere we look right now, everyone has their heart ticking. It is the one thing that we all have in common. And I thought that the idea of fire just perfectly represented that heart flame.
But the title does suggest both destruction and renewal. So what feeling do you think the audience might take away with them after having heard it?
Probably both. I think any transformative experience is both. That's what makes a transformative experience transformative. There has to be a destruction for there to be a creation of something else and a renewal. What do you think, Anna?
I would say that the music, really, I play a lot with the idea of the modality, like of the music of the heart. So I see the colors of the heart. I see the red color of the heart and I see the blue color of the heart. And within those colors, music can be made through sound. So the representation of red, the red heart, comes through a certain tonality, and there's an upliftment there and a sense of liberation and renewal. And then there's the blue color of the heart, which is a bit more about redeeming oneself and about the somber, the quiet, the inertia part of the heart. And so I bring that through the music.
And are there any elements of your own lives involved in it?
Absolutely. I would say that I put a lot of code in my music that only I know about. So even though Jessie's words influence me and I try to write true to her words, there are moments in the music where I express certain parts of myself that nobody else will know. So when I hear that bit of the music, I go, oh, that's a reflection on something personal.
I love that.
The work is being performed on Saturday and it's a world premiere. Is that scary for you guys?
No, I love that.
We're born to do it, aren't we, Jessie? We were made for this.
All right, then. Tell us about the Aussie-based Hourglass Ensemble.
Sure, that's run by the artistic director, Dr. Andrew Kennedy. And it's a wonderful ensemble because they do, I think it's like 49 Australian commissions over the last 10 years that they've been doing. And Andrew met me, I contacted him, and then he took on board to commission me. So I'm very grateful for that. And I nearly fell over when he offered me the commission. So thank you so much, Andrew. And then he offered me...
I trust he's listening to this discussion.
Unless he's in surgery. He's also an anaesthetist well as the clarinetist for the ensemble.
Okay.
So he basically said, you've got an open range with like a larger... Sometimes he works with only three players, but he offered me a larger ensemble. So I said, okay, can I please have the harp? And he said, you have to have the harp and piano. So I said, that's fine. But can I also have clarinet, flute, cello, French horn, and castanets, tubular bells, and the snare drum? And of course, sorry, because it is a song cycle, I had to work out which singer I'd like to have perform my work. So I chose a soprano, and then I got offered, Andrew said, the wonderful Amy Moore from the song company, who's their co-artistic director, will be able to sing your work for you. So I'm feeling very privileged and very lucky to have Amy Moore singing my work for me on
Saturday.
She's
incredible.
She's incredible. Yeah.
You've got the music in your hand. Are you going to sing something?
They're just notes, so I remember everything.
Okay. Tell us briefly about some of the other fabulously talented musicians who are going to be there.
Sorry, on Saturday?
Yep.
The other composers that are performing?
Yep.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of other. I think there's about three other world premieres, that right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. I think it's important that to experience that, people should go to the Opera House. It's at the Utzenroom in the Opera House, yeah. Which is a very delightful, intimate sort of place. And you're also on the program are some other works as well, and they are classical works.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit of that is what I played earlier. It's called Silent Woods. It's by Antonín Dvořák. Hearing just a little bit of that in the background. So tell us one more time. It's this weekend.
This Saturday,
yep.
The 25th of October, 7:30 at the Opera House.
And where do you think tickets are available?
Head straight to the Opera House website.
The Opera House website is sydneyoperahouse.com?
Yep.
Heartfire.
Okay, I'm talking with Anna Hurst-Friedman and Jessica Chapnick-Khan. Thank you both very much for coming in and talking to us here on Monday Drive.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Side.